a message for the people of Lebanon.
You have an opportunity to save Lebanon before it falls into the abyss of a long war that will lead to destruction and suffering like we see in Gaza.
Israel's war is expanding on multiple fronts, but to what end?
The Israelis, and I think rightly so, believe that the mothership, Tehran, is essentially the power behind the scenes that's controlling so much of these proxies taking action against Israel.
Today is Wednesday, October 9th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London.
This is a message to the people of Lebanon.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking in a video message.
Do you remember when your country was called the Pearl of the Middle East? I do. So what happened to Lebanon? A gang of tyrants and terrorists destroyed it. That's what happened. Lebanon was once known for its tolerance, for its beauty. Today, it's a place of chaos, a place of war.
Netanyahu making the case that Israel isn't Lebanon's enemy. Iran is.
Israel withdrew from Lebanon 25 years ago. But the country that actually conquered Lebanon is not Israel. It's Iran. Iran, which finances and arms Hezbollah to serve Iran's interests at Lebanon's expense. Hezbollah has turned Lebanon into a stockpile of ammunition and weapons and a forward Iranian military base.
And finally, urging them to take back their country.
Now you, the Lebanese people, you stand at a significant crossroads. It is your choice. You can now take back your country. You can return it to a path of peace and prosperity. If you don't, Hezbollah will continue to try to fight Israel from densely populated areas at your expense.
Israel expanded on its ground incursion into Lebanon on Wednesday. Norwegian Dr. Mads Gilbert, working in a southern Lebanon emergency room, says he believes the Israeli military is targeting hospitals and ambulances the same way they did in the Gaza Strip.
There is no hospital from the border to Israel and until you come to Nabatea now, because of attacks from the Israeli army. We have had at least 8 paramedics, ambulance paramedics, killed since I came here last week in the southern parts of Lebanon.
Israel claims it doesn't target civilians, but that Hamas and Hezbollah use civilians as human shields.
While Israel expands its ground incursion in Lebanon, it's also conducting a large-scale operation in the northern part of Gaza. In the attack, dozens were killed and 3 hospitals are now in danger of closing, this one filled with children. The latest strike came as the Gaza Health Ministry said the Palestinian death toll in the Strip has passed 42,000.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke on Wednesday for the first time since August. Vice President Kamala Harris joined the call. Netanyahu's office also confirmed that the prime minister got a call from Donald Trump last week. The office said the former president called to congratulate Netanyahu on the operations the Israeli military has been carrying out against Hezbollah.
Well, there are a lot of moving parts in the Middle East today, Lori.
I mean, wow, we've got expansion in Gaza, you know, ramping up in Lebanon. Iran potentially waiting for an Israeli retaliation, which it says it will respond to also. Boy.
And, you know, Netanyahu and President Joe Biden talking after not talking for 7 weeks.
Lots to unpack here. Joining us to help us out with all of it is Alex Fatanka, the founding director of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So let's start with the Netanyahu comments, speaking directly to the people of Lebanon. What do you think about that?
Look, obviously, I think Prime Minister Netanyahu knows the basic political realities of Lebanon quite well. That you know, a good part of the Lebanese society have some serious reservations about what's going on in terms of the country, both in terms of domestic politics and in terms of Lebanon's posture in the region. And in terms of the latter posture in the region, obviously, you know, the position of Hezbollah, its refusal essentially to do anything other than consider a military conflict with Israel as a way forward is highly problematic for the Lebanese. And, you know, given where Lebanon is today as a country with a myriad of problems it faces, what Netanyahu is trying to do is to sort of equate that, the set of problems they have, to the fact that Hezbollah has the amount of power it has. So that is his, as he likes to put it, that's where Lebanon is, where it is at, because of Hezbollah's political powers. But it's exactly those powers, the politics that Hezbollah essentially controls today in Lebanese society, which is the reason why the Lebanese people are in such a tough position, and they can't do much with it. With the request of Prime Minister Netanyahu, in the sense of getting rid of Hezbollah, is easier said than done. And in that sense, I don't know what Netanyahu is trying to achieve. Similar kind of messages has gone out to the Iranian people. Again, the vast majority of Iranian people don't like the Islamic Republic either. But not liking the Islamic Republic and being able to remove the Islamic Republic are two very different things. Again, so I'm not sure exactly what the hope here is on the part of Prime Minister Netanyahu, but there you have it.
Is he really speaking to the Lebanese people, or is this more strategic, potentially signaling that, you know, he has every intention of doing whatever it takes, including turning Lebanon into something as destructive and you know, deadly as what we've witnessed in Gaza?
No, that's exactly the right sort of question to ask. If there is no seriousness behind what he's asking to see being done by the Lebanese people, then is Netanyahu essentially engaging in sort of buying himself a cover of sorts, saying, you know, we did ask them to change the political makeup in the country. They didn't, and left us with no option but to use force to go in and do what Israel feels like it has to do, regardless of the, you know, consequences for Lebanese society in terms of death and destruction that might come with that. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to say for sure that Israel has some, you know, serious plans to extensively engage Hezbollah in terms of ground force invasion and so forth. I mean, it's happening to some extent already, but how much more is it going to happen in terms of numbers and how long Israel plans to stay in Lebanon remains to be seen. But all we can point to is, as we all know, Israel has done this before in the past. The invasion of 1982 was the reason why Hezbollah was born in the first place. And after 18 years of staying in Lebanon, the Israelis were forced to essentially leave that country, and Hezbollah came out of it stronger. Is the same kind of a playbook going to be put in motion again? I don't know. But, you know, people who follow Lebanese politics much more closely than I do will tell you that Lebanon today is very different than Lebanon of 1982, and that there aren't that many strong counterparts in Lebanese society right now to Hezbollah on the political level. So without local allies, the way that, say, Israel had and among the Christians at the times in 1982, who is Israel going to turn to as a local ally partner against Hezbollah? That's a difficult question for them to answer. And if they don't have local allies, it's going to be a straight-up occupation, if you will, of a country with the various problems that Lebanon have. And you just have to wonder how long Israel would be able to keep that up and at what cost.
Or is it like Gaza in the respect that Hezbollah is pretty much the whole government?
No, Lebanon has always had all these various political strands, and they still exist, have always existed historically. But my understanding is that in recent years, for sure, Hezbollah has been the main political actor in that country.
Remains to be seen if that has changed following the last few weeks of Israeli assaults on their leadership. Most of the leadership that has been targeted have come from the military ranks of Hezbollah. There's the whole political sort of component to Hezbollah. So we will have to wait and see if what Israel has done to the organization in the recent weeks has weakened it politically so far as to suggest that others in Lebanese society, the Sunnis, the various Christian dominations, might reconsider their political options, if there might be coalitions of sorts that would emerge, that would challenge the domination that Hezbollah has had in Lebanese society in recent years.
And let's turn to Iran, because this is a very big component of all of this. Of course, Hezbollah is an Iran-backed militant group. President Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu had a conversation on the phone finally after a long period of time, seven weeks, I believe, to apparently discuss Israel's plans to respond to the Iranian missile assaults recently. And already Tehran, the Islamic Republic, says Tehran's military is already preparing at least 10 possible response scenarios to an Israeli retaliation. This is contrary to what President Biden was concerned about as far as any Israeli action in Iran being limited and avoiding. I don't know if you call it a full-blown regional war, because it almost seems like we're almost there. Where does this stop if they continue to retaliate and Iran really gets involved in this, in a back and forth with Israel?
Well, I mean, essentially, it's a political decision that needs to be made, above all among the sort of Israeli leadership. Are they confident that if they retaliate now, as part of this latest round of tit for tat? I mean, you know, the Israelis took out Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh and then Hassan Nasrallah in Beirut. The Iranians fired missiles at him. Now Israel is expected to retaliate. And this is the second round in the last 6 months. We've seen this tit for tat. It's, you know, escalation that has been managed more or less in a way that has avoided the all-out shooting war. But there is obviously a shooting war going on across the region involving the Houthis in Yemen, the Iranians, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and we see Israel taking out pro-Iranian elements even in Syria. And on top of that, you've had the war in Gaza for the last year. So there are multiple fronts in this regional fight, if you will. But in terms of Israel, Iran going forward, I feel that the two big issues here are the following. The Israelis, at least some of them among the leadership, feel this is the perfect timing, or at least that's what they're saying publicly, to go for a kill, if you will, to stop this Islamic Republic once and for all. What that means, again, remains to be seen. Could it mean regime change? I don't think anybody seriously expects that Israel has the capacity to bring about regime change in Iran. Could it mean to weaken the Iranian regime's image, if you will, by destroying, targeting a good part of their nuclear program? Because we know they can't destroy the entirety of the program, but they can damage quite a bit of it. Is that enough when you consider the possible fallout, which is that the regime in Tehran decides to use an Israeli strike on their nuclear facilities to justify changing military doctrine, which is essentially what the Iranian officials in recent days have been saying, that if Israel attacks us and the world doesn't say anything, then the message for us, Iran, is that the only way you can protect yourself going forward against the nuclear-armed Israel is to weaponize your nuclear program if you're Iran. So again, that is the main issue for the United States, because the U.S. justifiably wants to support Israel in its self-defense. But when the Israelis go from self-defense to offense and risk a bigger potentially regional crisis, and in this case, forcing Iran to weaponize, that becomes the main headache for the United States, which is committed to non-proliferation in the region. So lots of moving parts to this, but end of the day, right now, the Israelis are making the call. Can they bring enough damage to Iran to justify a more serious retaliation than what Israel did back in April? And number two, is it worth creating bad blood with Washington in doing so, in going out unilaterally and ignoring what the Biden White House is saying? The Iranian side, I think, is very clear. They are hoping that Israel will not do anything significant to them, because that provides an opportunity for Iran to stand down, if you will. Because the Iranian game plan has always been avoid war, certainly direct war with Israel in the short term, but bleed Israel in the long term as part of support for the various proxy groups through this war of attrition that Iran has invested so much money and sort of ideologically in.
In that regard, do you think that Israel... So a lot of what Iran is by reputation, no, in the Middle East, you know what I mean? If they keep hitting Iran proxies and Iran itself, and Iran really doesn't respond in a significant way, do they then just make Iran look like a paper tiger? And doesn't that damage Iran in the region more than actually attacking them?
That might well be the case. I mean, look, the Iranians are not in a good position. This is exactly why the Israelis are taking a fight to Iran, to essentially force Iran's hand, to say, you've got to make a decision. If you want to allow war with us, if you want to keep, you know, squeezing us and pressing us from Lebanon, from Gaza, from Syria, from Iraq, from Yemen, well, then we're not going to just sit here and keep those proxies alone responsible. We're going to target the mothership, the Islamic Republic, and that has put Iran in a very awkward position, because, you know, they are forced to retaliate when they ideally don't want to do, strike the Israelis directly. That has been this Iranian modus operandi for some time. They love to be in that space where they can, you know, claim deniability that, yes, they support these proxy groups ideologically, they support the idea of fighting Israel, but they're claiming, that is Iran, claiming that they're not hands-on involved, which now Israel increasingly is making it very difficult for the Iranians to stay in that position of the gray space or claiming deniability. But end of the day, for Iran, whether they lose the image, the prestige by getting hit by Israel and non-retaliating kind, that is painful, I'm sure. But what would be even more painful for the Iranian regime and would risk the survival of the Islamic Republic is if they got into a tit-for-tat with Israel that escalates to the point of an all-out regional war that might force the United States into to the conflict. Because here's the basic reality for Iran. What Israel can destroy in Iran, United States can destroy 100 times or 1,000 times more. And that is what they fear. And that's why, you know, even when they have retaliated, as they did in April or just on the few weeks ago with the latest round, they have gone out of their way to say, you hit us, we hit you back. We hope you're not going to take any further action at this point. So I think that Iranian desire of avoiding an all-out war in the short term, has been clear essentially going back to October 7, 2023, with the Hamas attack. They came out and from then onwards have said, we support Hamas, we support Hezbollah, but we are not the kingmakers with the power brokers that are behind these actions. But as I said, Israel's making that very difficult of a position for Iran to maintain, because the Israelis, and I think rightly so, believe that the mothership, Tehran, is essentially the power behind the scenes that's controlling so much of these proxies taking action against Israel.
Alex, thank you so much for the perspective and the time.
No, my pleasure. It was good talking to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Alex Vatanka, the founding director of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute.
This has been The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue, all one word.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll see you tomorrow.